Hello and welcome to the second version of the Practice Mechanics Podcast, PMP. Indeed. We got the first rusty bucket out of the way, and now we're on to, what do they say, the first pancake out of the pan is the worst, and then everything gets better after that. So, yeah, we did our first pancake last week, and now we're on to the second one, no pressure. This has got to be better. My name is Michael Massey. Joining me is Rob Pape. Together, we are Practice Mechanics. Practice Mechanics is sort of a safe space on the internet at practice-mechanics.com. We are both a clinical evaluation, consultation, case management support, but also administrative when it comes to helping you with documentation, coding, insurance, HIPAA, risk management, compliance, Medicare, those kind of things. We are not a practice management entity. We're not trying to get your money. In fact, it's very cheap to join our organization right now, $29 a month with no obligation to continue. So you're welcome to come and kick the tires and join us with virtually no obligation whatsoever or much of a financial outlay. And we are continually adding more information and more material to our site. We also have some guest speakers and guest material on deck. So lots of cool stuff in the future and also in the current, if you're so inclined. We would really welcome you there. Rob, I'm going to kick it off to you. What is our offering? What is our thing of the du jour? What is our item du jour with regard to our website today?
Our announcement of the week.
Okay, that sounds better.
Is that what we should call it? Something, maybe. I don't know. Announcement of the week.
Spotlight. Dun, dun. Spotlight. Dun, dun. I don't know. It needs to be something dramatic because, you know, otherwise.
If we can get some dramatic music in here, like a 70s cop show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because as I'm saying this, I'm jumping and sliding across the hood of a 1968 Beretta.
And I'm putting on my plaid blazer.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And your mustache is amazing.
My mustache, my big long gun.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I got a corduroy jacket on.
There you go.
I've got velour pants and we're ready to go.
High heels, baby.
High heels. That's right. All right. So the announcement of the week is actually for material that you've posted in our shop recently. It's a Practice Mechanics has a shop where you can buy a few things. I think this is going to be a big seller because it's so valuable here, especially in the States. The Medicare Quick Reference Guide.
Yeah.
Is something you've put together and posted recently. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. It's a PDF, but a lot of people who have already bought it have said they've printed it and laminated it and left it, you know, at their front desk as a ready reference. It is, as I'm looking at it, 5 pages long. And it's just, like it says, it's a reference. It's not a comprehensive guide. It's the focus points. The pain points that people have the most. Mm-hmm. For instance, looking at the first page, it talks about Medicare participation, non-participation once you're in the system, what to collect under each side of that, whichever designation you determine you want to be, what's covered by Medicare. It talks a little bit about ICD codes, some hints and tips in that regard, procedural codes, CPT, modifiers, it discerns active versus maintenance care, acute versus chronic, initial visit documentation versus subsequent visit documentation. It goes a little bit into PART documentation, you know, as we're supposed to use that, pain, asymmetry, range of motion, tissue issues, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the last page is more of a hints and tips, extra points, and some myths dispelled, you know, about Medicare. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like that last page about as much as they like the rest of it because it answers a lot of things they've been told or told wrong or learned wrong or whatever. And you can rest assured that any of this information is from the horse's mouth. It's not my opinion. It's not conjecture. It's not assumption on my part. It's come straight from Medicare guidelines and regulations. So, and it boils it down. You don't have to go looking through all their governmental mumbo jumbo to get to it. So,
I feel like two things. One is that when you approached me about putting together Practice Mechanics, your whole pitch was, there's so much bad information out there about the things I teach on. And people come to me with questions is what you said to me. You said people come with questions and they've read a thing and the thing is just flat out wrong.
Right.
And so what I hear you saying is this is coming from the government entity that controls Medicare.
Indeed.
And what you've done is you've boiled it down to its nuts and bolts.
Yep.
And we all love shortcuts, especially when my wife was a contract negotiator before she left the corporate world and went into personal training and movement therapy, got her master's. So she's in healthcare now with me. But when we have a contract in front of us, when we were dealing with Medicare, guess who read that stuff?
Yeah.
My wife did. But not everybody has a contract negotiator with them to go through these things. So that's where I think from my standpoint, for me, as someone who isn't a lawyer and doesn't have those skills, if somebody can break this stuff down so that I get the big points, I want the Cliff's Notes.
Right.
On Medicare. So is that what you were looking
at here?
That's
exactly what this is. That's exactly what this is. And like you said, you nailed it on the hit the nail on the head. People come to me even to, you know, today. I got two emails today from people who said, this is my understanding of how I'm supposed to be billing Medicare. And it was totally wrong. Mm-hmm. And they won't tell me where they got that information. And my suspicion is it's many places. Mm-hmm. And none of them are good. All of them mean well, potentially. But it's, you know, government stuff is not something you play around with. You got to get this stuff right, or A, you don't get paid. B, the worst case scenario is you get audited and have to pay money back with a penalty. So a decent pay and a decent system, but you got to learn how to work it, you know, and work it to your favor and work it within the guidelines that they're set forth already. So yeah, it is colorful. It's concise, I think. It's enjoyable to read. It's not just a bunch of black and white words on paper, you know, that kind of thing. Uh-huh. I made it so it'd be visually appealing a little bit. So,
right on.
And that's what I like it. And we didn't mention it's $29.
Yes.
All right.
It's in the shop, like I said, on practice-mechanics.com for.
Yeah. There's a little tab at the top that says shop.
Right.
Just click that. And not only is my stuff there, but there's some cool posters and things like that there too.
Yeah. We got some
good stuff. You put up there.
Yes. Stuff in there.
And there's more to come.
Yeah. So let me ask you one more question about this quick reference guide, and then we can move on to our topic du jour. Is this something that front desk, your staff would have, would be valuable for them to be able to look through as well and learn from?
Yeah, I believe it's valuable for everybody. You know, the doctors need to know how to document, mm-hmm. how to code, but the front office needs to know how to bill that stuff. And you guys got to agree, and you got to be working off the same notebook. So, cool. Yeah, perfect for both.
Nice. Excellent. All right. In the shop.
Five
pages in the shop.
Yep.
And then laminate.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right.
So, or you can do like me and print it off in black and white and just stick it in your pocket. You can do that too if you want.
Put it up on the wall.
But the lamination and color is a pretty impressive little gizmo. I've seen it. That's nice.
Very cool.
So.
Yeah.
We're talking about things again.
We are. We got a thing to talk about today, don't we?
We do have a thing to talk about. It's a couple of terms, and I know you and I have talked about these, and that's why we're talking about them in public now. Mm-hmm. You and I have had these discussions over the years and over the months. Lately, a couple of terms that come up more, when we talk about pain science or case management or whatever, patient case management really is what it comes down to.
Sure.
A couple of terms. One is catastrophizing. Mm-hmm. And one is nocebo.
Yes.
And I guess maybe because those terms were brought to my attention some time ago, I'm much more attuned to it happening than I used to be, both in my own office and in patients who have been to other places, not just other chiropractors, but, you know, family doctors and orthopedic surgeons and physical therapists and all that kind of thing.
Yes, sir.
And they come with their notions, you know, based on those interactions. And yeah. And I never really, I mean, I think I did understand the power of suggestion in that regard.
Totally.
But we're seeing some concrete proof that words matter, you know?
Yes.
Words and terms matter to patients, and that matters enough to that it can affect their outcomes.
Yes.
Simply just by saying the right thing or the wrong thing.
I think the thing that we're talking about here today is one of these moments where the research catches up with what we already knew as practitioners long ago.
Right. And we might have even joked about it, you know. They made that sound worse than it was, you know, just so they get the patient to show up or come back or whatever. I don't even know if they mean to make it that way. That's just the way this stuff is presented to patients, don't you think, to some degree?
I question that.
It's both.
You know, I think there are some people who, well, let's give an overview here to start out with, right? So Mike shot me a couple of days ago a research article that was printed recently in the European Spine Journal. And the title of it is The Catastrophization Effects of an MRI Report on the Patient and Surgeon and the Benefits of quote unquote clinical reporting results from a random controlled trial and blinded trials. And basically what this article says is they took two groups of people, they MRI'd them. One group, they did normal, what they consider normal clinical reporting, which describes all the changes that they're seeing on this MRI. And then in the other group, they just assured them or reassured them that the MRI findings showed normal changes. And what they found were that after 6 weeks of treatment, the group that had the normal reporting had a more negative perception of their spinal condition, increased catastrophization, decreased pain improvement, and poorer functional status. So the alternate method where they just reassured people that these were normal changes that they were seeing on MRI, that had significant benefits in terms of lessening the severity of the disease, shifting to a less severe intervention. And that, from my standpoint, is what we've been trying to do. I've been trying to do that for 25 years.
Right.
We complain about this all the time where people, the key word is arthritis, right?
Yep.
Oh, I got the arthritis, doc.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know the patients who come in to see you who haven't had the imaging yet, but who demand the imaging because you know where it's going.
Yep.
They want confirmation of some sort of really like worst case scenario for themselves. And when they get that confirmation, and this isn't just medicine that does this, this is chiropractic too, yep. Especially on the tour side of things where they take the x-rays, they put them up on the x-ray viewing box, and then they've got the stages of spinal degeneration up there next to the box, and they just point out all these horrible things that are happening to the spine. And those people are, and we have the research now to back up what we've already known, which is those are the people who end up chronic because the fear of God is put into them and their nervous systems respond poorly to these things. And they get set up for basically a hyper sensitive nervous system response to their care, to their condition, to their pain. And it just worsens things.
Exactly. And I mean, to the point, there's a term for that, nocebo. You know, yep. Nocebo is floating around out there. That's an actual word, and it means something.
Yep.
It was kind of almost a joke word when it came out, but this is what's going on, is mm-hmm. people are being presented with a sort of benign finding, but attaching catastrophic, you know, potential forward progress, you know, exactly. to it. And that's the challenge.
Yep.
I mean, I see it every day.
Every day. Practice. And when it happens... When it happens, when a patient comes in and they've either had somebody present them their findings in this way, or they've come to see me, they haven't gotten necessarily the fastest results that they want, and so they go for a second opinion, they get the imaging, and it confirms their fears.
Right.
Those folks, I'd say, are less than 50-50 chance I'm going to be able to help them, even mm-hmm. if they're eminently helpable.
Yeah. I find those people, I mean, there are subgroups of all that to me.
Right. Yeah, generalizing big time.
I've got several of them, you know, that I'm seeing right now, besides arthritis, which is to me the worst one. Mm-hmm. But disc is another one. The minute somebody says disc,
yep.
bulge, anything like that, it's automatically, oh, well, you know, I have a disc problem. You know? Mm-hmm. And even though they'll come, and even though they'll get positive results here, that's built in. That's part of their persona now, that they have a disc problem or arthritis. And no matter how good they feel, they still harbor that, like on their backpack. You know, it's just a permanent thing, you know,
exactly.
to their person. It's part of them now.
Yeah. We talk about this in the QA Discord group. Chippendale and I were talking mm-hmm. about it over there. You know, how it really helps some people to get the diagnosis for their condition. It helps some people to get the imaging or the other test results. It calms some people down. This is where I think the reporting part becomes really important. Being reassured that there's nothing crazy there is the power of these reports. It's the power of the imaging. It's the power of the studies, so that you can get on with your work in the least invasive way possible.
Right. Well, we talked about it last week, I think, to some degree, where we said, you know, one of our jobs, if we can do it, is to give people hope.
Yeah.
And I can't count the number of times somebody's come and handed me an MRI or a MRI report, and they don't understand it because it's got lots of terminology on there and it sounds really horrible. And I read it over and I go, yeah, that's not surprising, and you're fine. You know, and you just see the weight come off of them. Mm-hmm. That they're expecting me to go, oh, wow, this is beyond my help, you know, that kind of thing. And I go, that's normal findings. It's no different than what I thought it was. Carry on. Let's go, you know. And even though they'll still own that in the back of their head, at least they don't think that they're suddenly under the knife.
Yeah. You know,
which is a good thing, too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good thing. I'm more of a hippie chiropractor than you are. So when folks come to me with those things and I look at them and go, I know this is scary language and I know all these words seem terrible, but honestly, these are normal changes that we expect.
Yeah.
If I had an MRI of my neck, it would show these things, and I don't have pain. If we took 100 people off the street and MRI'd their spines, depending on which study you're looking at, between 30 and 60% of them are going to have disc-related findings.
Yeah.
And those people have no pain and no history of low back pain. Mm-hmm. And they're going to show low back disc findings. Explaining those things to people from the hippie standpoint, I mean, you know, I'm not a hippie. But I don't wear the white coat.
Right.
Right. I don't wear the white coat. And my office traditionally has been more of a rehab based office where we do a lot of manual therapy and a lot of rehab, but we don't take x-rays there. We send out for all our imaging. So there's something I miss from not wearing the white coat in that scenario, I believe. And I gave it up a long time ago.
Sure.
I'm not going to change their opinion necessarily, but some of them do okay. And then some of them don't do okay. And then they come back to me, you know, a year or two later after other things have failed. And they're like, okay, well, none of that's worked. I wish I had tried you earlier. But that is a real issue where as a chiropractor, we're not at the top of the totem pole in terms of public opinion, in terms of who has the, what's the word I'm looking for?
Authority.
Authority. Thank you. In these scenarios. So a medical doctor could be a medical doctor who never, ever deals with musculoskeletal issues, has way more authority than I do.
Yeah.
And that is, and has been. And so when you told me about this article and I saw it, I'm like, thank goodness, maybe this will start to change more and more now because it's not changing fast enough.
Yeah. I mean, I ran into that just yesterday in my practice, patient who's, you know, and it happens every once in a while. They're treating with me, but they happen to go to their family doctor for something else and just happen mm-hmm. to mention, oh, by the way, my back hurts.
OBTW.
And that just puts them on the exit ramp to getting x-rays at the doctor's office and getting mm-hmm. abnormal findings. And immediately, you know, primary care doctors want to make that referral either to physical therapy or orthopedic surgery or both mm-hmm. right away. And so the patient comes in and thinks now things are way worse than I had implied. And even though I try and talk them down, they've already sent them and they're going to go anyway. Hey, I'm going to go. I know I'm getting better, but I'm going to go anyway because my primary care told me to.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, well, that's fine. You'll find that they find nothing. you wrote right down what I just told you. You're going to come back and they're just going to shrug their shoulders and go, I don't know why you're here. You got nothing. You know,
that's good.
But you get ahead of it. I like being right too.
There is nothing better than being right. Let's face it.
Yep. So anyway, yeah, I mean, it is a real thing. It's a practical thing. It's a daily encounter thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's getting worse. I just noticed that I notice it more, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if it's getting worse either. I think I notice it more because the general conversation around this issue, at least in the evidence-based chiropractic world, has been pretty consistent over the last few years.
Right.
Where we're all trying to reduce negative talk. We're all trying to reduce the nocebo effect potentially. And as a profession, or at, you know, this side of the profession. And this is, from my standpoint, this is something that I think both extremes of our profession probably need a little bit of help with.
Yeah. And I think another part of this article, because we looked at the abstract, the whole article goes into way more depth about this, because it also had different providers to survey those findings and draw conclusions too. Mm. And you got the same thing, that if somebody had been blinded to the actual analysis, I forgot how it was worded, but it jaded, or I guess for lack of a better term, it influenced the provider to decide how the patient was, if they were going to succeed, if they were going to recover, or if they were going to need more interventions. Right. It was the same. It correlated exactly with the patient findings.
Right.
So the providers were the same way. If they got a bad report, then that was automatically going to be a bad thing. If the providers got a layman's term, kind of, this is normal findings, then they're like, oh, good. That's good. That's, we should move forward then. Yeah. And that's what that concluded as well. I'd love to see the whole story, because I want to see kind of the nitty gritty details of that. But it looked like it lined up just with the patient perceptions too. Which it would, you know, you'd think it would, but we got it right here in data now.
That's excellent.
We have something.
The fact of the matter is that words matter.
Yep.
And it's a generational thing to some extent. Like my parents' generation worships the medical doctors, you know,
mm-hmm.
Everything they say is the word of God.
Right.
Our generation, not so much, and the younger generation, even less. The more information one has, the less stock they put into deifying certain figures. But if doctors can get to the point where they realize how powerful they are in these scenarios, not just the words they use, but the body language, the eye contact, their general affect as they do it. Right. Are you smiling when you talk to these people?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's there's so much meat on this bone. And you know, the smart people in our profession say it takes like 15 years for research to filter down to practice. I hope this doesn't take 15
years. Yeah, I agree. And I hope it doesn't take that long to filter down to our profession too, because I know we're guilty of doing the same stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Throwing up x-rays and drawing lines on them and going, oh man, look at that. Look at that. No wonder you feel the way you do.
Last week we talked about Corey Campbell's essay.
Right.
On, you know, the art of chiropractic. And I was saying, well, he kind of gives a pass to subluxation-based tour type practitioners. And this is one of the ways I think we have to call those folks out, is say, stop scaring the hell out of people by putting x-rays up on an x-ray box and telling them that their spine is degenerating. And if they don't get a year's worth of chiropractic care, then they're going to die.
Right.
Or be crippled. Or
even if they imply that. I mean, some of them have gotten smart enough not to come out and say it, as much as they just imply, if you don't come to me, who knows? Who knows what the future might hold, you know?
Yeah, just as bad.
Yep.
There's no excuse for that. And I understand it builds practices, but that's a crappy way to build a practice.
Yep. Well, I mean, many of us have proven you don't have to do that to build a practice either, you know?
Hell no.
The other way works really well too.
It
giving
does.
Hope and telling the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you can get people better in a month or two, if they have something significant, that's when you sell them on long-term maintenance care type thing, because long-term maintenance care type thing is really valuable for yep. many people, especially if they have a recurring or chronic condition.
Mm-hmm. And they're recognizing that more now too.
In the profession now, but I will say unequivocally, 25 years into practice, that we are better used as preventatives than we are as reactives.
Mm-hmm.
If you can,
and that's really true,
right? If we can find small issues and cut them you know, nip them in the bud before they become big issues. Mm-hmm. If we get to know you very well as a, you know, the doctor-patient relationship, so that when you come in for your biweekly or monthly visit, if something is radically different that we see in your system in terms of your movement, in terms of palpation, in terms of your affect, whatever it may be that we do during our evaluation, we can point that out and then talk to you about it. And is something going on? Is something different? Are you work stress, home stress? How can we get ahead of this so it doesn't turn into a flare up, a blowout?
Right.
Right.
And if it does, it's not the end of the world, you know?
Right. How can
we already have it figured out?
Right. How can we minimize it?
Yep.
Because if we don't, that's where, again, the catastrophization
comes in.
The catastrophizings.
Say it really fast.
I am. I feel like my grandfather.
A lot of letters and syllables in one word.
There's just too many letters. So that's where we catastrophize.
Yep.
These things. And you know, if we get ahead of it, if we know it's possible, then we can prevent it from becoming a big deal. That's where our value really, really lies. And the subluxation-based chiropractors can sell that just as well as anyone else can, because it's real. You don't have to sell people on fear-based plans.
And I mean, I've been at this long enough to know that I've gone through cycles with all that. And I know early in my practice, you know, my report of findings was day two and it was 35 minutes long, you know, and part of that speech was, when you get better, you're still not well and you're going to need me all the time forever, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I realized that sounded like a sales pitch and I didn't want, you know, that was one of the big digs against our professions. Once you go, you never get to stop. Right. And I kind of backed off of that because I didn't want that to be my legacy, you know.
Totally.
But then all this new stuff comes out and says, you know, we were right all along that if you do something along the way, you're a whole lot better. You don't ever get in the ditch and you don't have to be dug out of the ditch. You know, you're just going to keep cruising right along most of the time. And even if you do have an episode, it's not going to be nearly as severe. You're not going to spend nearly as much money or as much time in my office if you'll just push it down the road all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. And people are buying into that now. They're actually coming to me before I even get to mention it now. And I'm not shy to say maintenance is a big deal anymore. You know, maintenance is necessary, just like anything else.
We maintain our cars, right? Yep. Like, there's
cut your hair, cut your grass, you know, change your oil,
and exercise, right? Exercise is so important in terms of movement, so important for lifestyle. You don't go to the gym for a week or a month and then you're done forever, right? You have to maintain and build. And continue to go to get the effects long term for it to really do its thing.
Mm-hmm.
Body work is kind of the same way.
Sure.
I mean, you can do a lot of good work for yourself, but I know my body and I know how to work on bodies. I'll put my skills up there with just about anybody in the world. And so I can work on myself really well. But there's things I can't get anywhere near on myself. I can get maybe half the job done on myself. I still need somebody else's hands to really, really get to the deeper stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
So what do we learn here today? Right. Give hope. Don't make things sound horrible. You know, now we have data to support that concept.
Mm-hmm.
Don't catastrophize. You know,
yeah.
I guess I've covered all the bases. Yeah.
Okay. I have one more base I want to cover.
Okay.
I feel like there's on the opposite end of the spectrum here is some folks, because they apply the same thing to everyone who comes in, the power of positive thinking can be problematic as well.
Sure.
You don't want to downplay a thing and you don't want to tell somebody that everything's going to be great no matter what. Some people have real issues that need to be addressed, and we can't just gloss over them. So the answer to not nociboing isn't necessarily a blanket, you know, flower power, kumbaya, power of positive thinking thing.
False hope.
It's about saying, this is normal when it's normal. If it's not normal, don't try to sell somebody on that, the fact that it's normal and that you can get them better. Right. Know when to refer these things out. That's the other end of the spectrum.
Yes, absolutely. Know your limits.
Yeah.
Some people still struggle with that.
At least on my end, we can wrap this week.
We got that in there. That was good, though. That was a good final point.
Snuck it in right before the buzzer.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, in summary, that was a really cool talk. I like it. I think we're getting some good information out there.
Yeah.
And this helps me, you know. It helps me in practice when we get to hash these things out.
Yeah. Where did you saw this article? Where did this come to you from?
Someone posted it on Facebook, and I can't remember who, but then once somebody did, a lot of people did, because it resonates with us, you know.
I'm glad it's out there.
So I grabbed it.
All right, cool. All right. To reiterate our announcement of the week, the Medicare package, the Medicare Quick Reference Guide is in our shop. 5 pages of awesomeness.
Print $29.
Them up, laminate them, put them at your front desk, educate your staff, educate yourself. It's only $29 in the practice.
Less than $6 a page, man. less than $6 a page.
It's less than $6 a page. Hey, you know what? If this quick reference guide helps with billing for one patient, it's paid for itself.
Exactly. And it saved you a lot of staff hours and training, honestly, you know. Right. If you can trust the material, which you should, it's got a bunch of things at your fingertips that are very valuable.
That's it. It's about ease of particle. It's about streamlining, baby.
Yep.
Streamline that thing.
So thanks for joining us on this podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. This is our second effort, and we're going to keep getting better. We've mentioned it before, practice-mechanics.com. We also have a Facebook page, a Twitter page, an Instagram, TikTok, Clubhouse. Quadrant Analysis has a, what's the name of that thing?
Discord
page. If you need to get to that, you can let us know. We can get you in there. Mm-hmm. We may even show up on Fortnite and Minecraft before too long. we're really getting out there.
We might just send up smoke signals.
Any social media that presents itself, we're going to jump in it. Why not?
Right on, man.
All right. I enjoyed it, Rob.
I enjoyed it too, Mike. Thanks
so much.
All right. Later, everybody.